On Monday, we read from your emails. Anne wrote in during our program on proposed legislation that would expand the availability of DNA testing for convicted criminals. She's a retired forensics technician, and she says a federal law of this type is a good idea. DNA fingerprints, biological material, trace evidence is treated differently in almost every jurisdiction, she writes. I worked in that field for 5 years, and over that time saw some regions improve their management and testing of the materials and increase the level of training required by the forensic scientists and technicians. During the same time, I have also seen some regions take a step backward, reducing funds to do the initial testing, reducing pay for scientists and technicians, and cutting the compensation for attorneys working as public defenders. Without a federal requirement for credentialing of forensic personnel, without federal requirements for testing for each case, there will be no way to take a conviction or acquittal in one state and compare it to a similar case in another jurisdiction. April in St. Louis also favors a new law. Don't forget that DNA showed the innocence of the young men found guilty in the case regarding the Central Park jogger, she writes. Those young men pled guilty due to intimidation from the police, so pleading guilty does not necessarily mean truly guilty. I suggest DNA testing on all crimes regarding murder and or rape. But Robert adds this, we need to be cautious about treating DNA evidence as perfect and incontrovertible. What kinds of protections are in place to make sure DNA testing labs are honest and competent? If there is a major increase in the use of DNA evidence, will we see the growth of unscrupulous or incompetent DNA labs? Many of you emailed during our live remote from the new National Museum of the American Indian. You had several questions we felt we should address, so we've invited Chief Curator Gerald McMaster to join us. Thanks for speaking with us.
Yes.
So the first question comes from Jim in Sacramento, California, who wrote, considering that our government distinguishes between Pacific Islanders and Native Americans, how does the museum address the culture and experience of ethnic Hawaiians?
The United States Congress concluded that there was no national museum devoted exclusively to the history and art of cultures indigenous to the Americas. The Congress also noted that the Indian Museum would give all Americans the opportunity to learn of the cultural legacy of all Native peoples of the U.S. Now, the legislation that created the National Museum of the American Indian in 1989 defines Native Americans to include Native Hawaiians. The legislation further says that the National Museum of the American Indian should actively engage Hawaiians in our public programs. We have already, in our past program, certainly in our New York Museum, included Hawaiians in our exhibition program.
And speaking of the New York Museum, Catherine Forsland in Rockford, Illinois, wants to know what will happen to the Indian Museum in Manhattan.
The National Museum of the American Indian continues to actively program the George Gustav High Center in New York. When the decision was made to move this collection to Washington to become the National Museum of the American Indian, it was also decided that there needed to remain a presence in New York, which would be actively programmed. At that time, a 99-year lease was signed, and we now have three large galleries that have been actively programmed since 1994. We are not about to shut down our space in New York, but in fact, we are active and expanding.
And finally, Jim Bull in Lincoln Park, Michigan, wrote this remembrance. Several years ago, when I visited Washington, D.C. and went to several of the Smithsonian museums, I'm sure that I went to a Native American museum. As I recall, it was one story and basically one big exhibit room with, I believe, a bookstore, restroom, etc., in another adjacent room. Am I remembering this correctly, or am I imagining things?
Yes, Jim is correct. What he saw was the Smithsonian's Arts and Industries building, which is located on the National Mall, just right beside the castle. And it was an exhibition called Stories of the People. It was really an opportunity for us to remain visible in the eye of the public in anticipation of this brand new building that just opened last week.
Thanks very much for clearing up those points and speaking with us today.
You're welcome, sir.
Gerald McMaster is chief curator with the National Museum of the American Indian. He spoke with us by phone from his home in Washington, D.C. You can send us an email with your questions and comments. The address is totn@npr.org. Be sure to tell us where you're writing from, city and state, please, and give us some help with how to pronounce your name.